Welcome, everybody. It's only another Constant Geekery podcast, episode 3. I'm Dave.
And I'm Pete.
And this week we're going to be talking about the Apple event. Okay, so in last week's Apple event, Pete, we got a HomePod mini and we got some new iPhones.
Yes,
so
we did.
Our job is now to discuss. We'll start with the HomePod mini, shall we?
That's what Apple started with, so it seems like a good place to start.
And it is very mini.
Yeah, very, very small. Not quite as small as a golf ball, but if it was the size, if golf balls were that size, I might have a chance of hitting them, but it is quite small.
If golf balls were the same size as the HomePod mini, then the HomePod mini would indeed be golf ball sized.
Yes.
But it's not. It's more like a baseball size.
I'd say softball, slightly bigger again.
Okay.
Maybe.
Interesting device, though. Although it is very small, it looks like it's been fairly well designed. You can combine multiple speakers around the house and they'll all sync up. And what I particularly like is if you put two into one room, they'll automatically work in stereo.
Yeah, which is a great thing. You know, you get a lot of, you know, speakers like the Sonos and Bose offerings. They're just a mono speaker, although they are able to produce very good sound.
Mm. And in this case, it's a 360-degree speaker. So presumably you can place it anywhere and it should project the audio around the room. Obviously, that won't be stereo, but it does that really matter, I suppose, for most people these days?
No, it probably would matter to someone like you if you were sitting down to listen to music. But I think you've got to think about what the application is here. It's people who are doing things in the house and want a bit of music in the background. They're probably not sitting down to listen to music as an event. I think very few people actually do that these days. I might be wrong.
Yeah, I think if I was going to do that, I mean, I already have a music system for doing that. I certainly wouldn't be interested in serious music listening on a device like this.
But when you're cooking, you know, in the kitchen, I mean, I've got a nice Bose system in the kitchen, a Bluetooth and AirPlay speaker, and it's perfectly great if you're entertaining just to have a bit of background music. So I could see that being a good application for this. And people who are less fussed about, you know, audiophile quality.
Yeah. So it's got the S5 chip in, which is the same as is in the Apple Watch Series 6,
yep.
I think. Yeah. It's got some other cool features. You can bring your iPhone near to the HomePod mini to kind of hand off your music, which I thought was quite interesting. Obviously, it supports Apple Music.
Does it? Oh, that's good.
And podcasts good. And some other streaming services and internet radio.
Had you heard of any of those other streaming services?
A couple of them, but I think... you know, obviously, it's not going to have Spotify on. And I imagine you can still listen to Spotify. You'd just be doing it through Bluetooth.
Yeah.
So you'd control it on your phone and Bluetooth it to the speaker. But the speaker itself is obviously operated by Siri. It's not going to search Spotify. It's going to search Apple Music.
I do think, from memory, because I use Spotify, I think Siri can now... the Spotify API or the Siri API will talk to Spotify. I think he said Shopify there. That's another thing altogether. But the frustration of it is that you have to say, "Hey Siri, search Spotify for," rather than I've just actually set off "Hey Siri" on your iPad, which is quite amusing.
Yeah, I don't. This does my head in. It really does, because why is it responding to your voice? Let's just take this into the next thing on my list, where it says it can recognize the voices of each person in your household. And I had a little chuckle to myself when that happened, because mine goes off all the time, mostly when I'm not saying the trigger word.
Mm-hmm.
But other people's devices and other people talking seem to set off my device.
Yeah, it would be interesting to see people listening to this podcast, perhaps through a speaker at home, how many people's devices will go off when I say, "Hey Siri." Let's have a look. But going back to the point I was saying, you can ask it to search Spotify for music, but you have to explicitly say that. So you can't set Spotify to your default music player, unless I've not bothered to look into this. Someone might correct me in the comments. Whereas, obviously, if you use Apple Music as your subscription of choice, it will automatically search that. So if you're using Apple Music, it's going to be more seamless.
I think it's fair to say that Siri isn't as good as Google or Alexa. So, and I'm not convinced about this recognizing the voices of each person in the household. If it does, then that's great. Something else that it has, of course, is integration with CarPlay. And I wasn't paying enough attention, but it seems that you can sort of say, I'm, you know, set a destination and it will hand off to your CarPlay. which is an interesting idea.
Yeah, I think it goes beyond that. We saw that illustration of someone saying, what's my day looking like? So you go into the kitchen to pour your coffee, or it looked like a big jug of wine that the woman was pouring, but I think it was meant to be coffee. Hey, Siri, what's my day looking like? The HomePod mini would then sort of schedule your appointment or let you know your appointments and that. And then when you get in the car, it knows the destination that you're going to first.
Right. So that's quite good. So
it is if you don't work from home like everyone does now.
Yeah. Can I just say as well, we're not going to say that the trigger term anymore during this podcast. We shall simply refer to it as the trigger words, and everyone will know what we mean and will not hate us for the fact that we're setting off their devices. So it's a kind of smart home thing that obviously will integrate with smart home devices and other things. But my question to you, Pete, is can't we do this anyway with an iPhone? Do we need a HomePod mini to access these functions?
Yeah, I believe you can. But I guess, you know, more than one way to do things is the way forward. What if you've left your iPhone upstairs charging or downstairs charging, wherever you charge it, and you want to turn off the lights in some part of the house or unlock the door or whatever smart. I don't have any smart home accessories apart from a CCTV system.
Okay. So what I will say about that is my iPhone is always charged because I've got a lovely bedside wireless charging stand. And if you have a look on my channel on YouTube, it's youtube.com/constantgeekery. You'll find a review of the Mophie 2-in-1 charger. I'm not sponsored by Mophie. I just like some people to actually watch the video because I thought it was quite a good video and it doesn't seem to have done very well. great device anyway. So my iPhone is always charged.
Is that because you don't use your phone as well?
Well, no one wants to call me and I don't want to talk to anybody. So it's... You know, it works for everybody.
He's got no SIM card in it either.
What about this intercom system? So if you've got multiple HomePods, you can intercom between them. This requires issuing the trigger phrase.
Yes.
And then let everyone in the house know something or other. Then it will record what you say and it will play it to other people in the house. Or you might be able to identify a single recipient. Mixed feelings on this. There's a walkie-talkie feature on the watch. I don't know if you've tried that. It's not very reliable, is what I'm going to say.
Okay. I have noticed the walkie-talkie feature on the watch. I haven't tried it because I've had no need to. But yeah, I could see if you live in a house, I suppose it's a reflection on the modern world, isn't it, where you perhaps... You used to be able to just call up the stairs to say to your children, dinner's ready or something like that.
You still can do that, Pete. I don't think HomePod Mini prevents you from just hollering up the stairs at your kids.
That's true, but I think that in the ideal ecosystem that Apple has in mind, you know, your friend, your children might be listening to something on their HomePod Mini and maybe doing something else on their phone, maybe playing a game on Apple Arcade in this ideal rose-tinted glasses world. And therefore, when you call up, they're far too into what they're doing. So if the HomePod stops and says, dinner's ready, then that might actually get them to come down. But yeah, I've never felt that as a need. But hey, you know, maybe my house is just that bit too small that I can reach people with my voice.
Yeah, the house that they were demonstrating in the video as well didn't look particularly massive. It just seemed really lazy
to
me.
Nice house. Yeah, but can I ask you a question?
Okay.
Just a quick one. Have you ever texted a member of your household to make you a cup of tea or coffee while you're in another part of the house?
If I'm in bed and the boys are up already, I might FaceTime them and say, is that coffee machine broken or something? Just to get the hint across.
So is it an extension of that, maybe?
Yeah, possibly. The thing is, if it's an intercom, everyone can hear it. And I also don't like this idea of... prefacing every sentence with the trigger phrase. I'm sure Apple would love us to all be walking around and preface every sentence with their trigger phrase, but I just think it's a waste of breath. As is talking about this for this amount of time, particularly when we've got so much iPhone content to talk about, Pete. So
let's
move
on with it.
One thing they were clear about with the privacy is that the requests are not connected to your Apple ID. So when you're talking to HomePod, everything's encrypted when it goes up to the server. It only leaves your home and goes over the internet once you use the trigger phrase, apparently.
Mm.
Unfortunately, as we've identified, it's quite easy to trigger
the phrase
and have the devices then starting to record things that you maybe don't want them to record.
Well, and also that sentence is a little bit ambiguous. Nothing leaves your home until you say that. It doesn't say anything about what you said before it. I may be a bit suspicious, but...
Perhaps. Anyway, if you would like a HomePod Mini, it's only $99, which compared to some of Apple's other pricing seems rather incongruous. But they clearly want to get these devices into people's homes. If you want one, you can order it on November the 6th, and it will start shipping apparently on the week commencing, or on the 16th of November.
Mm.
Let's move on to iPhone, Pete.
Yeah, everyone's looking forward to that.
Now, they rather ambitiously, of course, and in the typical Apple waxing lyrical, spoke about this as the beginning of a new era for iPhone, and then proceeded to spend quite a lot of time talking about 5G, which is...
I've not come across that before.
It is a new era for phones, but 5G's been around for a little while. Apple was talking about 5G as though they had invented 5G. That was kind of way it came across. It was very USA-specific.
Yes.
They've clearly partnered up with Verizon, and it would seem that they've funded some rollout of 5G as well.
I did get that impression. I meant to research it before this podcast, but didn't, so... Who knows? But yeah, it certainly sounded like they'd done that.
So I don't think we need to talk massively about 5G. We will come back to that as we're talking about the phone. 5G's been around on other devices for a while. You know, Apple's late bringing it to market. I think that's fair to say. However, it will be on all of the new iPhones. They will all be 5G capable.
Mm.
So if you happen to live in a city that has 5G, you're sorted. For people who live in rural areas like us, 5G isn't coming to us anytime soon.
No, and...
Nor do I particularly care about that, because my 4G is incredibly quick as it is.
So. Yeah, we don't have all the congestion of traffic in the countryside.
No, I quite frequently get well over 100 megabits on my phone. But anyway...
So can I ask you a question? What did you think about the iPhone 12's all-new design?
Okay, well, it looks a lot like the old iPhone 5, was it?
Mm-hmm.
With the kind of aluminium border. I don't think it's an all-new design.
No. I actually think it's a good design, though. I prefer it to some of the more recent iterations.
Yeah, I mean, it basically looks like the iPad Pro, doesn't it? Or new iPad Air. That's their current language. And, of course, it's the amazing new design and everything else until everyone gets bored of that and they turn it back to a curvy design or something else to shift some more iPhones.
Mm-hmm, definitely. But yeah, I think it's a sound design. It's one of my more favourites.
And five colours available?
Yeah, black, cream, red, green and blue.
So hopefully there's something in there that pleases everybody. OLED display, which they're calling Super Retina XDR. And the pixel density is just crazy. 460 pixels per inch, which is twice the density of the iPhone 11.
Yeah, and when I was watching this, I thought, do we really need that much more density, this sort of Super Retina? But then I must admit, I did think that when they brought out the Retina screen, it's like, really, do you need more high fidelity? And actually, the Retina screen was noticeably sharper and cleaner when you compared it to an old one. So who knows, maybe we will be able to tell the difference.
Well, it's a product of your distance from the display. And I'd like to make a video about this, actually, because I think a lot of people don't realise. A lot of people go out and buy a 4K TV, and then they sit so far away from it that it would actually be impossible for them to tell the difference between 1080 and 4K.
Hmm.
I'd imagine, and maybe someone can do the calculations and let me know in the comments on the YouTube version of this, how close would you have to hold your iPhone 12 to your eyes in order to be able to see that level of pixel density? I'm guessing it's pretty close.
Maybe if you put it in one of those Google goggles.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, let's move on. 2 million to one contrast, which is nice. Mm-hmm. 1,200 nits brightness, so it's HDR. Supports Dolby Vision. HDR10, I think. I think that's what they said. HLG. So, yeah, nice display, basically.
Yeah, it will be lush. If you need a new iPhone, you know you're going to have a nice display on it if you get one of the 12s.
Yeah, so that's great. New glass as well, Pete.
Yeah, Corning Ceramic Shield, they're calling it this time. It did sound impressive.
They were using an awful lot of long words and talking about high temperature crystallizations and other sort of things.
Yeah, four times better drop performance. Well, that would be good because I know a lot of people, including myself, who've dropped my phone and the screen's gone on it. So that will be good. I'd still like to see a phone where if you accidentally put it in the pocket that has change or your keys in it, doesn't instantly scratch. But who knows, maybe the ceramic shield will do that for you.
Perhaps. I suspect people will still end up putting another piece of glass on the top. Most of us do, don't we? Okay, so they've come up with some new antenna positions, specifically around 5G, custom antennas, custom components. So hopefully we won't get a repeat of the you're holding it wrong antenna gate situation. But they did show off some impressive testing facilities, didn't they?
Yeah, that kind of, it looked like an acoustic chamber, didn't it? They did give it a name. I can't remember what it was called, some kind of chamber, which I'm not going to try and pronounce again now and get it wrong. But I think this does illustrate something that's worth mentioning. We do rag on Apple sometimes for the price they charge for their products, and often quite rightly so. But when you look at some of the investment they make in technology, in testing, in the facilities to do that testing, it's not insignificant. And if it makes for a better product, there is a cost to that, which they have to build into their R&D. I'm not saying Apple are you know, just covering their costs. Obviously, they're making healthy margins. But there is a cost to this constant improvement that consumers have got used to expecting.
Yeah, and we'd expect nothing less from a premium phone, would we?
Absolutely not.
Now, iOS is tightly integrated with 5G. That's what they're telling us. I don't really know what that means, other than 5G uses a lot of battery.
Yeah.
So the phone will switch off the 5G if it feels that you need better battery life.
Yeah, which I suppose, a bit ambivalent about. Sometimes it's frustrating if a phone's making a decision for you that you don't want it to. But equally, there are, it mentioned that the operating system, iOS, and apps have been built to utilize the appropriate network speed. So if you need something that needs 5G, something more on demand, then it will give you that. But maybe background process is not so much.
I'm just going to question this, though, because at the end of the day, your connection is only as fast as the server that's providing you with content. So if you're saying to yourself, well, I'd like to download a particular file and I want it to go at the supposed 4 gigabit speed, well, if the server's only connected via a half gigabit connection, that you're not going to get anywhere near 4 gigabits. So it people need to understand, just by having 5G on your phone doesn't mean that all of a sudden all of your content is going to come down quicker. And I think actually in a lot of cases it probably won't make much difference at all.
No, and they did say in ideal circumstances, or words to that effect, on a lot of occasions during the quoted speeds. And you're absolutely right, it's not just the connection of the server, it's how much bandwidth to serve, how many other people are asking for that piece of content, what sort of bandwidth has that server got?
Exactly. And they showed an example of a stadium, and we were speaking at the time when watching the event, and I was just saying about, you know, at Silverstone last year, watching the MotoGP race, and you try and use your phone just to get the live timings and stuff, and it's hopeless because everybody's on the 4G. So the same thing will be the case, that your mileage will vary. So let's move on. Let's talk about the A14 Bionic chip.
Wow, this looked impressive.
It does. So a couple of the highlights. We've got 11.8 billion transistors, which may not mean anything to you, but it's that's supposedly almost 40% more than the A13 that preceded it.
Yeah.
It's a 6-core CPU and a 4-core GPU, but you can't think about these chips as being just a CPU or just a GPU. It's an entire system on chip. Memories on there. It's got these neural engine cores, 16 of those for machine learning purposes.
Yeah, 11 trillion operations per second. That's just amazing. A mind-numbingly large amount of operations.
Mm-hmm.
11 trillion of anything is a lot. It's beyond really what we can comprehend as humans, but it's doing that per second.
You probably couldn't even count to 11 trillion in your lifetime. That's how big a number that is. It is a huge amount. They spoke about games. You know, some people do use their iPhone for gaming, and League of Legends is coming to iPhone, and I've never heard of League of Legends.
No, I've never heard of it, but I have to say the frame rates that they showed did look very good for any kind of game on an iPhone, particularly when you have multiple users kind of interacting. I guess that's when speeds can can slow down in terms of how that's rendered. And also they were tying that into the 5G as well, weren't they? About with 5G, you kind of have near real-time interaction. So if you're into gaming, if you're into your online gaming, they're kind of saying you can pretty much do it anywhere.
Yeah, as long as you've got a 5G connection. Mm. That said, or a good LTE 4G connection would do the job as well. I guess the comparison might be the Nintendo Switch. You know, that's the kind of best mobile gaming device, but I would say this has probably got rather more power than a Nintendo Switch has got.
Yes, it has, but then a Nintendo Switch is a pure gaming machine, isn't it? It's got the right controllers and everything like that, so...
But, you know, third-party companies will make some sort of dock that you can put your iPhone into game on. So if that's what people want, then iPhone can do it. And it looks like it's got the developer support.
Yeah, absolutely.
So dual camera system. So much like the current iPhone 11, so you get an ultra-wide lens and a wide lens.
Yeah.
I think they've made it slightly brighter.
Yeah.
It's f1.6. If you're a photographer, that'll mean something to you. That is a bright lens, though, f1.6.
That's quite impressive to put in the phone.
Yeah, absolutely. And high quality as well. 7 elements in that lens.
Yeah, in that tiny little package, which is going to give you better low light performance anyway, because it's a lens that lets lots of light in.
Yeah, so the lower that F number is, the more light that is coming through the lens, basically. But it also affects other things like your depth of field. It's not all just about that. And Apple is controlling that depth of field malarkey with computational photography. This is where all of those machine learning cores come in.
Yeah. And what's your feeling on that? I know you had a feeling on the night. I think there was a word that you came out with when we were watching this.
In my notes, I've got the word meh written down. And I have a good reason for that. But I'd like to come back to that after we've spoken about the video, if I may.
Yeah, absolutely. So the computational photography, along with that low f-stop lens, gives a really impressive night mode. Mm. You know, very, very impressive, particularly as well with backlit scenes. So they had some examples of people with the sun behind them. And, you know, there's a golden rule that I was brought up with photography. You always shoot with the sun behind you. But now with computational photography and these amazing lenses and processing, that's no longer necessary. You can have the sun pointing at you and still get detail on someone's face.
Yeah, and it looked pretty reasonable, to be fair. These skills, of course, come across to the video as well. So there's now a night mode time lapse, which that'll probably be quite fun to play with. And they demonstrated a video that was just shot and edited entirely on iPhone 12. Now, we're not talking about the Pro yet. We'll come back to that in a moment. And the thing I noticed about this is the stabilization or lack thereof.
This was the Vegas scene, wasn't it? I think it was.
Yes, it was a night wedding in Vegas, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So stabilization wasn't really there, but the overall quality for a phone was very good.
It was actually stunning, I would say. And I think that really does show the capability of this phone. However, I do have an issue with it, and I have an issue with a lot of these things. And you might say, oh, you're just being curmudgeonly and old, but it's still a professional shooting this. Someone who understands light, someone who understands framing, you know, dressing the shot, choreography, storyboarding, and editing. All of that is still been done by a professional. I think one of the videos we saw was actually edited on the phone as well, but I don't think this one was. So yes, you can get good results with it, but it's like anything, if you expect to be able to go out and just shoot, you know,
cinematographic or something like that. I've probably just invented a word there.
I'm sure someone will tell us that we have or haven't, but if you're trying to get those cinematographic looks, just because you've got a tool that can do it, That doesn't compute. That's not going to happen.
No, it's exactly the same principle as when Apple will always show you with the iPad and the pencil and someone's made these elaborate notes in their university lecture and you're thinking, hang on a minute. I never managed to have any time to make notes like that when I was using a piece of paper and a pen. What on earth makes you think I'm going to do it on an iPad? It's just nonsense, but it sells the product.
Yeah, it's marketing. Yeah. And Apple know how to market their products.
They do. However, the long and short of it is that it's pretty much the same as the iPhone 11. It's 4K and it goes up to 60 frames per second at 4K. The frames per second, I find this incredibly irritating. More than half the world has 50 hertz power grids.
Yeah.
Sorry, a 50 hertz power grid, whereas the United States is a 60 hertz power grid. So some lighting, for instance, when you're shooting at 60 frames per second or 30 frames per second in the UK will appear to flicker.
Hmm.
And the way that Apple deal with this in their native app, you can get other apps that allow you to change the FPS.
Filmic Pro's the one of choice for me, but yeah.
So Apple then uses an automatic shutter to cancel out the flickering. But that means that your shutter angle or your shutter rate is changing, and anybody who's interested in filmmaking won't be happy with that either.
No.
So it's all very well saying, you know, these are great tools for cinematographers, but I can't see them ditching their proper cameras just yet.
No.
But let's hold that thought until we get onto the pro phones, because we're going to come back to video for those as well.
Yeah.
And let's move on to...
Wireless charging.
Yeah.
So excited about this.
I'm not as excited as you, Pete.
I stand by the fact, and anyone who knows me who's listening to this will know I'm very excited about magnets. Magnets are a very man thing for me. Return of the MagSafe brand, which really should never have gone away as far as I'm concerned. Great concept on MacBooks.
It is a great concept. I understand why they did it, having the versatility to charge your MacBook on both sides, assuming you've got the one with ports on both sides with a single USB-C connector, is very useful. But the MagSafe brand is still being used. You can still go on the Apple Store and buy yourself a MagSafe or a MagSafe 2 power adapter.
Yeah. But this is the return of the MagSafe brand for iPhone.
Would it not just be a little bit confusing?
Well, no, I don't think so. I mean, this is brilliant, isn't it? You've got this magnetic...
Well, it's like a round disc. So you've got this wireless charging disc, and the magnet just helps to locate it in exactly the right spot. So instead of plugging something into your phone, you slap this magnetic thing on the back.
But not just for charging. Not just for charging. Accessories as well.
Okay, yeah. So you can attach your case via the magnet and the magnetic wallet accessory.
Yeah.
Which is basically a leather sleeve to pop your cards in or whatever. And it costs how much?
You did tell me, and I've forgotten.
$60 or £60.
$60. But there's a lot of R&D that's gone into that piece of leather.
Huge amount. It's leather and magnets. It's going to be very expensive.
I was very excited. There is a practical thing to this. So I've got an in-car mount for my phone, which has a magnet that you put on your case. And I've just changed my case, and I haven't put the magnet back on it, because you have to stick it to the case or to your phone if you want to. Do you know why I haven't done that? So I'm not using that magnetic in-car charger at the moment.
I assume that gets in the way of wireless charging.
Correct. And that's really annoying if you've got a phone that you rely on wireless charging. So this does resolve that problem as well. So that's possibly why I'm a little bit more excited than maybe you are, and probably everyone else, but I'm quite excited about that.
And Pete's actually put in our notes for this, woohoo. That's how excited you were, Pete.
I did do a little woohoo.
Right.
Whoop.
We are going to move on, though.
Okay.
This is an important topic.
Yes.
Apple are claiming that the iPhone is 100% carbon neutral.
Yes.
And you love this, don't you?
Well, I think it's commendable. And it's a good example for such a large company, and not just the company, but they're forcing this into their supply chain operation as well, to basically set an example of saying this is what we're doing, because changes to environmental impact are only going to happen at that macro level. Yeah, we can make a difference by switching off lights and, you know, being recycling things to a degree, but it's big corporations like this and the suppliers that they have, including, they're saying, getting stuff out the ground. That's where it needs to start. However, I'm not under any illusion that this is just scratching the surface.
Yeah, and so let's not take away from, you know, to get to this point, that's commendable. We're pleased to see that that's happening. However, Apple undoes all of their good with their resistance to right to repair.
Mm.
And I don't want to get into that in any detail in this video, but Apple is determined to stop people from repairing their equipment, and instead they want to recycle all the time.
Mm.
And so you get a perfectly good MacBook that maybe just needs a cap changed, which admittedly, you know, that's a skilled job. It needs a skilled technician to do that. But it is entirely repairable and reusable, or at least it would be if Apple hadn't tied the SSD to the T2 chip, which makes a lot of these products unusable when they break if you don't have the passwords. They're also in the process of suing a company, one of their recyclers, because they were taking components out and selling them. Apple just does not want people repairing their products. Well, before you get to the recycle stage, you know, and it's great that the stuff gets recycled, but before you get there, you repair and you reuse.
Yeah.
And Apple's not doing that. But the biggest thing for me, Pete, biggest thing for me, at the last event, they spoke about how they were going to be removing the wall wart from their products. So you don't get a USB wall adapter anymore. You just get the cable.
Mm.
Because their argument is everybody's got the wall adapter. And I made a flippant comment about it also, you know, it's a bit extra money in Apple's pocket. And I got taken to task in the comments by someone there. However, the new iPhone does not come with a wall adapter. And which cable is in the box, Pete?
It's a Lightning cable, isn't it? USB-C to Lightning.
Right. How many USB-C wall chargers have you got kicking around?
I've got one for my MacBook Pro.
Right.
And I use it for my MacBook Pro.
You've probably got one for your iPad Pro as well, actually.
It's probably in the box, but I also use the MacBook Pro one to charge this.
Yeah. I think
that's my iPad, just for those that don't know what I'm pointing at.
Yeah. A lot of people won't have the latest MacBook Pro, won't have an iPad Pro, but they will have an iPhone. They won't have a USB-C wall adapter. Why has Apple put USB-C wall adapter in? There's no possible benefit to doing that. I'm going to come back to this cable again in a minute and rag on it, but there's no benefit at all. There's no speed benefit because it's always going to be limited by Lightning, because mm-hmm. that's what goes into the phone when I'm talking about adding external devices here, not charging. And for charging, you know, the USB Type A port has become ubiquitous. I've got, you know, in my garden office, when we had the electrician come and install the plates.
The wall outlets, yeah.
The wall outlets. It's got USB Type-A sockets on it.
Yeah.
And most new houses have that. We bought some new sofas when we moved into our house, and one of them's got recliners. So on the side, you've got electric controls for the recliner and also a
USB-A.
USB Type-A. So,
you're saying your house is obsolete, your sofas are obsolete, they need a software and a hardware upgrade.
What I'm saying is you can claim that you're 100% carbon neutral. You can claim that you care about the environment. You can even argue that you're saving money, you know, because you're not putting the wall chargers in and you're reducing e-waste. But that all gets completely undone when you put the wrong cable in the box. And I would say 95% of people going and buy an iPhone 12 will also have to buy
a USB-C from Apple charger.
A USB-C charger.
But what you will also get, and I bet someone in the comments will say, so I'm going to beat them to it in the YouTube comments, is, oh yeah, but a lot of people will have a Type-A to Lightning cable hanging around, because let's face it, the ones that come with the iPhone don't last the life of the phone. So you probably do have a few of those lying around, so you could use that.
That's entirely possible. And you could have, you know, you could just go and buy one of those cables. That's not really the point. The point is, what is Apple putting in the box? And I think by doing that, they've just shown their true colours.
Mm.
You know, because they're not really thinking. There's no benefit to that USB-C cable.
And there is just one more thing on the and I'm going to use air quotes, the environmental credentials. They said this will stop precious metals being mined from the ground, all this recycling and this carbon neutral. It's like, that's a really noble aspiration. But are you telling me those precious metals and materials aren't going to be mined by someone else? Surely someone else wants them for something else. So, yeah, Apple may not be mining them or their supply chain, but someone else will be. So it doesn't stop the fundamental problem.
It doesn't. Well, I suppose, you know, that's outside of their control to a certain degree. So I think we've got mixed feelings about this. I think, you know, on the one hand, yeah, great. Apple's certainly making a lot of steps towards being more environmentally friendly, but they also undo it with their stupid douche corporate behavior, and that's as far as we need to go on that. If you want to hear someone ragging on Apple about this stuff, go and watch Lewis Rossman. I don't agree with everything that Lewis says, but you know, Apple certainly need to up their game. I think they've made a mistake here. Moving on then, let's go to the iPhone mini. This does please me. I would like to have a smaller phone. 5.4-inch display.
Do you know what I like about this? Smaller, but exactly the same features.
Yeah.
None of this, oh, yeah, you can have the smaller one, but you don't get the extra camera or the extra this or the extra that. All the same features, just smaller, including magnets.
Okay. So let's get to the prices. $700 or $699 for the Mini, $799 for the iPhone 12. And they did put up some contract deals where you know, with cellular providers, but those were all USA specific. But there were some, there are some very good USA contract deals available if you're after an iPhone 12.
Definitely.
Let's move on to the 12 Pro.
Oh, yeah.
And the most important thing, I think, is that it is indeed shinier.
That, yeah, it's, I would say it's at least 300% shinier than previous iPhone.
That's the kind of statistic Apple would give you. So it's, instead of having aluminium around the edge of the phone, it's a surgical grade stainless steel.
And about time, I would say. I love the concept. I mean, aluminium's a great material. I love that. But stainless steel, it just...
But isn't the current Pro got that as well? The iPhone 11 Pro is... I'm pretty sure that's got the shiny steel as well.
The shaver one. I don't know, actually.
So it's available in a silver finish, graphite, gold, and Pacific blue, which does look very pleasant.
Yeah, they all looked pretty clement to my eye.
And you've got IP68, so that's submersion to 6 meters, I think, for up to half an hour.
Which is, to be fair, is better than I can do.
We could try it.
Well, we could try it, but you might not have a podcast at the end of it, which some people might say, yeah, try it, but there we go.
Okay.
Two sizes as well.
Two sizes. So
6.1-inch Pro and the 6.7-inch Pro Max, which I don't like that name.
No.
It makes me think of something which I'm – it makes me think of nappies or diapers. That you have the maxi size diaper and that.
Or sanitary towels.
Or those. I was just trying to keep
but
it.
But that was always the joke about the iPad, wasn't it? That was the joke that did the rounds back then.
So what we're just waiting for now is an iPad Max.
Extra absorbent. Largest display ever in an iPhone, apparently, for the 6.7-inch. I think this is largely down to the small reduction in bezel size, I suppose.
Mm. Yeah. So that's good if you want a bigger, if you want a, you know, proper phablet.
Yeah. It has to be said, though, that I would never go and choose a 6.7-inch phone. That doesn't appeal to me at all. But if you want the best features, you do have to go for the big one. But let's talk about that. So we come back to cameras again. So there are three cameras. So you get the Fillishave effect, as we like to call it, as well as the front-facing camera, actually. So that's four cameras.
Yeah.
On the standard Pro, you get the addition of a telephoto lens. We say telephoto, 52mm equivalent.
With a f2.
Fairly bright, actually. But obviously, if you're thinking telephoto in terms of like massive zoom lens, 52mm is technically telephoto, but I'd call it more of a portrait lens. What they're saying is that gives you, from the ultra-wide up to the telephoto, is basically a 4x optical zoom. Through that set of three lenses.
Yeah.
When we go up to the Pro Max, the telephoto lens is now an f2.2 65mm lens. So that gives you, across the whole range of lenses, 5x optical zoom.
Yeah, but a slightly darker, the f2.2, slightly higher f-stop, so that's not going to let as much light in as the one on the Pro.
No, but that is a minimal, I mean, it's not a full stop of light, is it? It's a very small adjustment. I think that's a quarter.
It's more of a comma or semicolon of light, isn't it?
Yes, it's not a lot. You do get a larger sensor, and it's the same resolution, I think, but it's the pixels on the sensor are larger.
Yeah, which is a good thing.
That is a good thing. It means you'll get better performance.
And this is one of the reasons, you know, a lot of people say who aren't really into photography. I hear it said to me, but I hear it said to a friend of ours, actually, who's a photographer, is what's the difference now between, you know, you can get really good pictures on your phone versus, you know, spending thousands on the camera. And it is the sensor size is one of the biggest things, isn't it? So by definition, the phone has to have a tiny little sensor, and therefore it's not as good. It's not going to give you as much range and depth, but a larger sensor is a move in the right direction to improving photography.
Yeah, and I think... Sorry, I was distracted then because one of our lights just flicked off. When we say larger sensor, let's get everything in context here. It's still an incredibly small sensor.
Mm.
You know, we're not getting anywhere close to even like the one-inch sensors that you get in, say, a Sony RX100 or something like that.
No.
It's certainly nowhere near Micro Four Thirds APS-C or full frame. You know, it's not even in the same ballpark.
No.
However, what they have done is, and I think this was present on the previous model, but it's
the OIS.
Yes. So stabilization by moving the sensor.
Yeah.
It can make 5,000 adjustments per second, which effectively gives you one stop of additional, as in you could handheld a photo in poor light. You can go an extra stop with a handheld picture before you've got to get to a tripod. That's the kind of benefit of an optical image stabilizer like that. A lot of cameras have got that. I think Sony were possibly the first to do it.
Mm.
But
makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? Moving the sensor, which is a lot lighter than trying to move the lens, adjust the lens.
Yeah. And of course, professional cameras, a lot of them, they do both. You know, you've got the lens is optically stabilizing the sensor, but, you know, we're talking about a phone, obviously.
A pro phone.
Previously, I've always questioned that Pro moniker, but now you're able to shoot in Apple Pro RAW, although actually not available at launch, but later.
Yes.
Later this year on both Pro models. So both of those Pro phones will allow you to shoot in RAW.
So do you want to explain that for those listening who may not, they might have heard the term RAW because it's becoming more common in photography, even in prosumer cameras and what have you, but just explain what that means.
So it's basically a format that captures what the sensor captures. If you've got your camera in JPEG mode, then it'll capture what the sensor captures and then it will process the image into a JPEG, and you can't do a huge amount with that JPEG afterwards. With a RAW image, you can, you know, you have got more room to move. There's more dynamic range. You can recover highlights. You can boost shadows and without, you know, getting really rubbish quality and loads of noise in the image. So professional photographers do use RAW. That's not to say that JPEG photos are no good. They're absolutely fine for a lot of things. What's interesting about this RAW, though, is that it's going to combine computational photography.
Yep.
And we don't really have time to go into that today, and I haven't done enough research on it to go into it in any details, but I'm interested to see what that means. Presumably it means you can change focus points and other things, perhaps. We'll see.
Yeah. And there's support for that new Apple Pro RAW for third-party and photo apps, and there's going to be an API for other apps to use it as well, isn't there? So there's going to be – Apple are pushing this and pushing the support for it as well.
Yeah. So that's a nice touch. Photographers often say the best camera is the one that you've got with you. You've always got your phone with you. So yep. Being able to take better quality photos, that's great. Will it replace a professional camera? Probably not. Pro video.
Mm.
And this is quite interesting.
Yeah, this is HDR video recording, 10-bit.
10-bit.
That is impressive. 700 million colors.
Yeah, so just so everyone's clear, 10-bit color means, you know, huge amounts more colors. It's actually quite difficult to edit because if your display doesn't support that many colors, you don't actually see the difference.
No.
But again, it allows you to manipulate the image with less destruction.
Yeah.
And it's particularly used in video recording. Being able to shoot 10-bit gives you a much better quality image, and you're able to color grade and do a lot more with it.
So you've done that. You've got a Blackmagic Pocket Cinema camera, haven't you? And
yeah.
that can shoot in 10-bit color, as can the Panasonic GH5 I typically use on my channel. In fact, we're recording with that now, although we're not recording in 10-bit, because there is a disadvantage to 10-bit.
Yeah, obviously more information equals higher file size.
Much higher.
Now, of course, that's not a problem on your GH5. It's got two SD card slots. You go and buy bigger SD cards.
Yep.
Piece of cake. What do you do with your Apple phone?
Well, you upgrade your storage, but even so, it's going to eat through it. And with a, they haven't put USB-C.
Right. So this is where I wanted to come back to that cable again. You know, it's still limited to Lightning. Lightning is considerably slower than USB-C. So you're not going to be able to plug in an external SSD, for example. Whereas with USB-C, you could.
Yeah, which is what you do with your Blackmagic, isn't
exactly
it? Actually,
yeah.
An internal external SSD is massive, and therefore you can film 10-bit color and not worry about running out of space.
Yeah, so I shoot in, when I'm using that camera, I shoot 600 megabit codec, which is, you know, massive, six times the size of, I think, of what the GH5 is putting out. And it all just goes straight onto a Samsung SSD, which is plugged in via USB-C. So had Apple put the USB-C port into the phone, that might have been possible. I suspect Apple don't want you to do that. They want you to spend more money on the internal storage. And when we talk about pricing in a minute, we're talking about 128 gigs. That's what you get as standard. And any
it's not going to be enough actually shoot those full settings. I did have a thought about this. I don't know if you remember on the night. At the moment, we're kind of in a situation where 5G is still being rolled out, and it's going to be a few years until that's kind of ubiquitous everywhere. But at that point, if you can have that kind of upload speed that they quote, then I can see a situation where Apple are saying, well, you won't store locally. You will literally just fling it straight up to cloud storage using your super fast 5G connection. And I can... Some might say, well, that's preposterous. That's not going to happen. But I can remember when FaceTime first came out and they were saying, well, yeah, it's fine on a 3G network. And back then, our 3G networks in the country were just, they were patchy. They weren't available. Now we're on 4G and we FaceTime, we WhatsApp FaceTime or whatever all the time. We don't think anything of it. So Apple are naturally looking one step ahead. And I could see them saying, well, if you want to record 10-bit, just upload it with 5G, assuming you've got it.
Which, of course, most people won't. They did a demo film with Dolby Vision. And again, not going into detail with it. Looks impressive.
Stunning.
Look really great. But are cinematographers going to be dumping their high-quality cameras to go and get an iPhone 12 Pro Max? No, they're not.
No.
And, you know, once you've put enough storage on your Pro Max, you're up to the price of something like the Blackmagic Pocket Cinema 4K, which can produce far superior video with the right person behind the camera. So this is... actually, let's just talk about LiDAR for a minute, and then I'll come back to my thoughts on the camera equipment.
Mm.
So they did a demonstration which looked very similar to what Microsoft did a long time ago.
Oh, with the HoloLens.
That's it. Mm. And I'm... Yeah, I was massively disappointed that never became a proper reality. Apple, again, of course, they'll claim all the credit for it, riding on the backs of what other people have done before. But they did do that demonstration with the real estate. And,
yeah, measuring out a room and all the panels of it. And, warts and all.
That's it. Sorry, our TV's about to switch off. So for those on YouTube, they wouldn't see the lovely... the lovely background that we have up.
No, absolutely.
Of course, if you're just listening...
Sorry about that.
I say just listening. If you are listening on the podcast, you miss out on that amazing experience of seeing a television.
And us. But you can focus in on my Carl Sagan-like buttery voice, apparently. Thank you for that compliment. I'm going to be dining out on that for a long time.
Pete, that's about the fifth time you've brought that up.
I'm so really chuffed with that. That's a high standard.
So they're using the LiDAR as well to aid autofocus in low light.
Yeah.
This isn't something unique to Apple. I'm pretty sure DJI have just brought out a system that attaches to your camera. So you've got a motorized a motor to move your lens. So if you're doing video basically with a manual focus lens, you can use this LiDAR system to autofocus a manual focus lens, which is great. Simple truth is that serious cinematographers don't use autofocus.
No.
They manually focus. And, you know, in fact, there's someone who's dedicated to that particular job on a set usually. So autofocus doesn't really matter for video. I guess it's great for end users. So let me get to the thoughts that I just wanted to share briefly on this. I'm not a great cinematographer, by any stretch of the imagination, and anybody who's watched my channel will be able to see that I do a lot of experimenting, and it's quite often, well, there's a lot of mistakes. However, I've had to learn that. You know, at this point in my career, after 20 years as a developer, I've started to retrain myself into these new areas of photography and videography. And it's hard work learning all of this stuff, learning color grading, learning how to use the software, learning how to use the cameras and the equipment to get the best effects. It takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of work. So when you do make something that you're happy with, you sit down after you've finished and you've uploaded it to YouTube or you've sent it to the customer, whatever, you sort of feel it's like a reward. You know,
it's a sense of accomplishment there, isn't there?
Yeah, there's been that creative outlet. So not only have you been creative, you've learned skills and you've put those skills to use, and you've done something that was hard work, and you've come out the other side with something amazing. And that's creativity for you. Creativity is not picking up a device that does all the work for you, randomly pointing it around and coming out with some kind of film. And that's why all of this computational photography and video and everything else does not excite me at all. I think it's a terrible thing. All right? It's great that, you know, people are going to have better quality family snaps. But what about, you know, wedding photographers?
Hmm.
If people are able to do these nice-looking photos, and I say nice-looking, you know, with that fake depth of field thing, if you look at it closely, you can quite often see the issues with it. But are they going to say, well, I'll just shoot my own wedding on my iPhone? And you've got wedding photographers who've trained all their life and are really skilled at what they do, suddenly
losing work
because someone's bought an iPhone with AI in it.
I mean, there will be people who are saying, oh, well, that's a very Luddite-based view. You know, the nature of progress and technology is that jobs do become redundant because technology replaces it. But I think we're talking here about something fundamentally different, which is creativity, aren't we? And often the choices filmmakers make are based on sometimes the limits that the equipment gives them, or knowing that certain effects can be achieved through certain creative processes, or actually leveraging the limits to create that. You know, take the fake depth of field, or the bokeh, as Apple. I've never heard it called that before. I'd always heard it as depth of field. Maybe it's just my limited...
Well, those two things are different. So
are they?
Just be careful about how you...
All right.
It's bokeh.
Okay. I show my ignorance. So I make no apologies for that. I'm the dumb one in this podcast. But my point is that... I've completely forgotten what my point is. Those things are a product of creative choice in a lot of cases. And if anyone can do them, then they in themselves become... I have completely lost my thought on what...
That's right.
No, sorry.
I
agree with you anyway.
We're already seeing this happen, you know, with the full-frame cameras. A lot of people are using these for video, and they're using these ridiculous shallow depth of field that's... You know, it's so shallow that one moment, you know, they can have one eye in focus and their ear is out of focus, and it looks ridiculous. People, please stop doing that. That's not the way the professional cinematographers do it. But this is an example of you if you can create an effect very easily, people will use that effect. And that's always been the case in technology.
It's my thought has come back to me. You know, you look at things like word art. Do you remember when word art came up? And suddenly everyone thinks they're a graphic designer because of that. Just because you can do something doesn't mean you should. You know, if you really study the art of filmmaking, the craft, you look at some of the great directors out there, people like Scorsese, you know, Francis Ford Coppola, all those kind of people, they understood painting with light, which is essentially what filmmaking is. They understood how to light and frame a scene, how to decide on color palette, how to decide on depth of field, all those kind of things. They were part of the story making process. Just because you can do those things doesn't always mean you should, and it's not going to make you a better filmmaker. They can assist you, but they are not the be all and end all.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a few aspects to that. I think genuinely this idea that we don't need to do the work anymore, that the device will take over, I think that is going to be very unfulfilling for people.
Take something away from us as human beings.
It does. As humans, we want to be creative and we want to work. It's you know, Yeah. That those, if we do that, if we work hard and we're creative and we do these things, and we're happy, we're happier in our lives. So if that's taken away from us, then
what else? What's left?
Well, there's still quite a few things left, I think. But that's, you know, certainly, I think I would feel
we're diminished.
Yeah, we're diminished. Yeah, it's a good term. Let's leave it at that. And maybe you don't share our viewpoint on that. I guess it depends whether or not you've invested a whole bunch of time in learning this stuff.
Maybe we're just bitter.
Bitter, yeah, perhaps. Pricing then, so for the Standard Pro?
$999, a snip, really.
It's a lot of money, isn't it? Mm. Another $100 on top if you want the Pro Max. I would say that's worth the upgrade if you can cope with the larger phone size.
Yeah, you probably need a laptop sleeve for it or something like that.
That's 128 gig of storage, which would be more than enough for me. If you're intending to mess about too much with 10-bit Dolby Vision, then I should think you might run out of storage. We'll see. Availability then for the Standard Pro, you can order that already. Orders opened on Friday, and they should start delivering next Friday, this Friday, which is the 23rd, I think.
Yeah.
For the Pro Max, you can order on November the 6th, and it will start shipping on November 13th. Assuming you get in quick enough. They have reduced their pricing on the rest of the lineup, haven't they?
Yes, I believe so.
I think, what's the SE down to now? Is it 300 or 400?
Oh, I wish I should have checked that before we started, something or other.
Yeah, it's obviously a lot cheaper now to get an iPhone. And the range of pricing that they're covering is much wider than previously. So the iPhones themselves are becoming way more accessible. And the iPhone SE is still a great phone as well.
It is. And if you combine that, you know, we talked about HomePod Mini's pricing earlier and the fact that if you get any of these new devices, you get a year's music free, I think, anyway, don't you? It's something like that. Clearly, Apple are pushing to get their ecosystem into homes as much as possible. That's obviously part of their long-term strategy. To do that, really, you need the whole gambit. So iPhones being more accessible across the range of pricing seems to fit with that.
Yeah. I think it's Apple TV that they give out, not the music. I think music is always a paid for. You might get a few months. I'm not sure. I don't want to mislead any of the listeners. Just be careful that we give the right information.
I tend to speak off the cuff, whereas Dave does check things more. So never listen to me.
I think it also, having more accessible iPhones, and I think this is a topic for another day, but if there were more used and refurbished iPhones available, allowing more people to access the ecosystem, arguably Apple would make a heck of a lot more money.
Agreed.
So, and the other one of our battery-powered lights has just given up. I think we should just give up because we've been at this far too long. I hope you enjoyed some of our thoughts on the iPhone. Please bear in mind that we're two middle-aged, miserable chaps who we've got a particular viewpoint on various things. If you're going out to buy one of these and you're watching on YouTube, let us know in the comments. If you have some thoughts of your own to share, please do so. Always love reading the comments in the comments section. Pete especially loves it if you stroke his ego. And then I'll never hear the end of it for weeks at a time. So thanks for that. And if you're not subscribed to the channel already on YouTube, it's youtube.com/constantgeekery. Only costs you a click. Hopefully we did enough to earn a thumbs up or a thumbs down if that's your thing. We'll see you next week for the Constant Geekery podcast. I have absolutely no idea what it's going to be about yet, so that will
something
be a surprise.
Scintillating and engaging and thoroughly worth listening to.
Unlike this week's podcast.
Sorry about that.
See you again soon.
Cheerio.